The Protectors of the Wood episode series, episode number 8. Glenda spun her wheels in the gravel driveway, and in seconds they were through the green light and heading up the four-lane highway with little traffic. After getting over her annoyance with the grease stains on Tiny's shirt, Glenda chatted for a few minutes about her hopes for school, but Phoebe was picturing the boy in the gas station office. He's staying in that loft, she thought, and the guitar must be his. I bet he's got a toothbrush in that foul bathroom. Phoebe tried to shift her attention to Glenda's discussion of college, but her mind was spinning with other thoughts. Tiny interrupted to say, I'm going to school too. What was that? Asked Phoebe. Me, I'm going too. That's right, said Glenda. We're both going to school in September. Our next step will be to enroll Tiny. She's already visited a class. Her friends from the church group are all going. Dawn wants to put Emily back in school, announced Tiny, looking at her two wooden figures. For ages, Emily didn't go to school because for ages it was a weekend. They forgot to go to school. That's why Dawn needs to put Emily back where she's supposed to be. Know what they learned? Know what? The days of the week. Tiny seemed to be thinking through one of life's basic principles. I think I get it, said Phoebe, and glanced at Glenda over Tiny's head for guidance. Dawn is the good fairy, explained Glenda, and Emily is her daughter. They look like my father's carvings, returned Phoebe. Both figures had wings, but one was twice as tall as the other. The taller figure wore a crown and held a wand alongside her body. Their dresses were painted pale blue. Dawn and Emily, Tiny said. Penny gave them to me. How nice of her, replied Phoebe. I'm glad. Kayla's going to the preschool too, Tiny went on. Lucy's already going. She sees Rose and Rob every day. Oh, cried Phoebe in surprise. Of course. I went there too. Yes, 14 years ago. I know Rose and Robert. They're very nice. Though I'm afraid I was a little hard to handle, Phoebe thought. She smiled to herself. And they brought classes to the toy store every year for arts and crafts. I've got to get in touch with them again. You're going to like it there. I want to go to the toy store too, said Tiny with glee. I want to do arts and crafts. That's great, Phoebe cried. I do hope you get your chance. She could hear the emotion in her own voice and knew it was far too loud. She took a deep breath. Both Glenda and Tiny glanced at her with puzzled expressions. It's hard for me to talk about the toy store, Phoebe admitted. It was such a big part of my life. As if we didn't know, returned Glenda. I've been wondering how you'd handle it. I'm so curious, asked Phoebe. What is it like around there now? Oh, nothing you'd want to talk about. No good news. Please, I need to know something, anything, however bad. Well, Glenda replied, there's nothing really bad. It's just that whenever I go in, there's hardly anyone there. And I go pretty often for Tiny's toys and books. All I see is Gilligan behind the counter reading a book. Sometimes George Thompson works there, but I can't even tell what he does. Phoebe's heart skipped a beat. My God, she thought. George? He's taken my job? Oh, no, this is awful. Her heart sank. She took another deep breath and tried to calm herself. I had no idea, she said, trying to sound indifferent. How did he end up there? Oh, sorry, somehow I thought you knew. Glenda glanced at Tiny and then shot Phoebe an apologetic look. I heard he argued with his parents and wanted to get out of their store. Sounds familiar, said Phoebe. That used to happen all the time. And his Uncle Gilligan helped him out. Plus, well, you know, George always wanted to work at the toy store. Glenda gave Phoebe another apologetic look. George's tragic crush on Phoebe was well known, almost legendary, among the teenagers in Middletown and Half Moon. Phoebe frowned and stared into the distance. Beyond the cedar trees by the side of the highway, mile after mile of swamp grass and water rolled away under gloomy skies. Glenda drove on and waited. "Do you mean," Phoebe suddenly burst out, "that George finally gets to work at the store when there's nothing left to do? That's so sad." "But it's true. The magic just kind of went away." They both watched the road. The eerie view of stunted trees, reedy grasses, and pools of water went on and on. Dark clouds promised rain. The moments dragged by. Tiny relaxed onto the seat and then onto Phoebe's shoulder and closed her eyes. After a long time, Glenda said quietly, "You know, Phoebe, I understand how it feels to lose a lot that's precious, but still go on and make it work." "Does she mean her parents?" wondered Phoebe. "What can I possibly say about that? What can I offer? I've never been able to really imagine it. It's too frightening for me." "You know about my parents," Glenda continued. "And then there's my husband, Dennis, Tiny's father. That's been a struggle in a different way, but I've made it work." "I never knew what happened," said Phoebe in a whisper, very aware of Tiny sleeping on her shoulder. "He tried to get a job here in Middletown," Glenda replied in a low monotone. "But his uncle, that smug jerk, Bob Bentley, wouldn't take him. So his parents finally got him a job with Bill Owens at the Owens Apples office in Fellsburg. It was a shock. But now I think it's probably just as well. He's not ready to raise a family, and if he hadn't taken the job, what good would it be for both of us to be here raising Tiny without careers, without any money? Now at least he helps pay for his daughter." Phoebe waited, sensing that Glenda was not finished. After a minute, she went on. "I know he's never around, but he's still my husband, and his parents are a big part of our life. They're very close to Tiny and see her twice a week, sometimes more. They're rich people, well-connected, and I've depended on them for a long time. It's been hard. I really don't have any money of my own." A deep frown wrinkled her forehead and the corners of her eyes, but she remained focused on the road ahead. "I just go on and keep trying, and look, here we are driving to the university. Tiny is fine. I have friends. I feel good about my life. I'm a lucky person." "She's trying to say something about me, about my life," Phoebe realized. "It's nothing compared to what Glenda's had to face." "We can help each other," Phoebe said. "I'm glad to be with you." Glenda gave her a smile. The visit to Teachers College ended in the late afternoon with the promise to get together soon. After being dropped off on Main Street, Phoebe watched the blue truck heading up Oak Knoll Lane and considered what to do next. She wasn't ready to go home. The dark clouds hadn't blown off, but there hadn't been any rain yet either. Phoebe decided to walk back to High Street and up the hill past the apple trees. She needed to give Glenda's news about George some thought. Her big plan in returning to Middletown was to work at the toy store, but discovering that George already had a job there certainly threw a wrench into things. And to top it off, Glenda had described a store with very few customers. Gilligan probably had little cash to spare. In the dim light, the apple trees looked twisted and contorted, shaped like grotesque humans struggling to stretch their arms and stand up. Phoebe put her hands in her pockets and limped up the hill. A fine drizzle began to fill the air. "Without the toy store or soccer, I just don't know who I am." Her thoughts took a sorrowful turn as she tried to imagine seeing George again. "If he asks me what's up, what can I say? How about, oh, nothing? Or maybe I could say, well, I had my heart set on working at the toy store, but you kind of ruined that for me. But that would be stupid. It's not his fault. This is all a hot mess. But Glenda has the right idea. I'll make it work somehow. Phoebe continued on up the hill past Cliff Views Road, with the trailer park and the shadowy mist on her left, and a cornfield to her right. She noticed a deserted lane and took a right. The rain began to fall harder, but with her hood up, she tried to ignore it. Memories of George and Ellie Thompson awoke and poured into her mind. Memories of being thrown together as children working in their parents' stores over many years. Ellie, 3 years younger than Phoebe, had copied her expressions and her clothes. George, a year older than Phoebe and in her class all the way through school, had nursed a crush on her since the age of 12. For years, to his parents' dismay, he had spent every free moment at the toy store and even tried to work there. Phoebe vividly remembered during the first month of 11th grade arriving among the throng of students early one morning to notice everyone pointing at her and laughing and making remarks. A crowd had gathered by the big bare brick wall outside the gym. But on that morning, the wall was not bare. The name Phoebe had been painted in giant white block letters over 20 feet up the sheer face of the 30-foot wall. Even now, she felt overwhelmed with embarrassment. She hadn't even been talking to George at the time. They'd had a bad breakup, and that bombshell message was designed, like a colossal love note or bouquet of flowers, to make her relent and restart their relationship. But Phoebe had been too confused about her own feelings for any normal romance. She felt horribly awkward at parties and always longed to be on the soccer field or working at the store. How had George even gotten up there with a roller and a tray of white paint? Everyone seemed to know that he'd done it. Yet when Phoebe asked him, he denied it, giving her a hurt look. He looked so sad that she never forgot the pain in his eyes. He must have known that this heroic effort had failed on every level. Soon after, the tag, outsider, written as two words, one above the other inside a circle, appeared all over the high school, Half Moon and Middletown. Everyone said that George was the one tagging things, and in less than a month he ended up suspended from school for graffiti. For the rest of high school, they'd stayed on separate paths. George played guitar and Phoebe played sports. She had never shaken the guilty feeling that it was partly her fault that he'd gotten in trouble. And now she risked making things between them even worse. I've got to talk to him. But going to his job and asking for work is obviously not the best idea. Phoebe noticed a crushed cardboard box by the roadside and gave it a kick, only to feel the pain of the kneecap grinding and the joint overextending. I just can't see a way forward, she thought. No matter what I do, but I'll find something. She remembered her dream, the part where she saw a way through the pine trees in the storm. Phoebe walked down past another orchard, barely visible in the rain. She was now thoroughly soaked and no closer to a solution than when she started. It occurred to her that maybe Jim and Jeremy would know where George hangs out or who he hangs out with. Maybe I could meet George somewhere like at Sammy's and just catch up with him and see what he's been up to, how he's doing these days. She'd been looking for a good reason to go back to the gas station, and now she had one. At least it's a place to start, she thought, with hope coming alive. As she walked down the hill toward Main Street, the rain broke loose and came down in sheets, and thunder rolled somewhere nearby. She limped along at top speed, heading for home. Follow all our episodes on our website, www.protectorsofthewood.com. Thanks for listening.